posts on social media may include statements concerning financial market trends and are based on current market conditions, which will fluctuate and may be superseded by subsequent market event. The investment strategies and broad themes discussed in World HD live streams, recordings, and social media posts may be unsuitable for certain investors depending on their specific investment objectives and financial situation. Information and data contained in posts and on live streams have been obtained from sources believed and checked to be reliable, but not guaranteed. You should note that the materials on the social media platforms are provided as is without any express or implied warranties. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments involve a degree of risk, including the risk of loss. Any comments made in the materials are opinions with no guarantee that any expressed course of events will actually transpire, and no compensation has been paid to any person providing a testimonial or comments.
Good morning, coming at you live from America on Rumble X and LFA TV on this Wednesday, August 13th, 2025. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to World HD. We are live most of the time, every weekday morning at 8 a.m. on the LFA network that runs from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. with live content and analysis to find the truth. All right, are we good, Frankie?
Everything's rolling, rocking. Great to be here. A few issues on Rumble's tech side, but we're back. Ready to go. Let's go.
All right. So I can't see the chat, but there's a couple good questions on there Frankie's going to read to me until I can get it up and running here. But what we want to do today is, again, go through a little bit of economic data and then go through some stuff. There's a lot to cover today, right? Got up this morning and I was like, well, we got a pretty light, you know, lineup of things to talk about. And then all of a sudden it just kind of filled in pretty fast. So I want to hit this kind of hard today. We really want to try to get to this real estate stuff today. All right. Because I think it's so important as we start to get to potentially a top here in the stock market. All right. Let's get after this, Frankie.
Let me give you this question because it is a great question from Zero Woke Points. Asking Craig, on the graphs that you reference, you often mention the levels 5/8, 7/8, etc., and the full upside target/objective. How is that target amount calculated, or by whom? Analysts, models? Love the questions, by the way.
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's my proprietary. The way I came about this was I was always curious about markets, right? You know, really. You know, for almost 40 years now, right? And I've been trading actively in markets for 30 plus years. And so I ended up, you know, trading, and then I went back to graduate school at Indiana, and then got an internship there, you know, at a place down at Ned Davis Research down in Florida. And then I went back there and worked there after graduate school. And I'd already been trading before all that stuff, right? So I'd been trading, and then the combination of that and just a super rich environment for data, right? I was really hired there off the 2001 NASDAQ bubble, you know, the crash of that. And so all this money, right, you know, of course, the story comes out, oh, we can't ever let this happen to the you know, the public again. We can't let them get duped by something else like this dot-com bubble. And then, of course, we get the real estate crisis, you know, 5 or 6 years later. So it doesn't stop, right? But anyway, the story was that they were going to, you know, find certain Wall Street firms, take the money from the sell side research, right? So those are the big Wall Street firms, you know, the Morgan Stanleys, the Goldman Sachs, right? The, you know, those kind of names. They then had to pay money into a pool. It got then pushed down to the next level tier, the next tier down of research analyst firms out there. And so that's what we were, right? So we got, I don't know, a big chunk of change, right? To basically build a product for the public, okay, to allow them to have research at their fingertips so that they could then stay up on things and not get caught in that situation again, right? Well, I never saw that product get rolled out. As much as I like Ned Davis Research, I never saw that product get rolled out. I never saw the other firms who got the money roll out a product either. But what it did is it helped build out our database of data, right? We probably had one of, if not the richest databases of data out there. So that was nice for me. I was in custom research. I was able to do a bunch of research for hedge funds, pension funds around the world. So I had these ideas and I had all this computer, you know, that was my job, right? Was to build these models and test things out for these big pension funds and big hedge funds. And so I'd get custom research questions coming in and, you know, and it was nice because I could then, you know, ask some of my own questions of the system, use the data. And then I went up to Chicago and traded in the short end of the yield curve, right, after that for a year, year and a half. And then I got involved in, I stayed with them, then I got involved in some farming operations. Anyway, through this whole process, right, I was building this model out, okay, on Harmonix, right? And I didn't know what it was at first, right? I just knew that, okay, here's this energy seems to build up. And then it goes to these levels, right? These full upside objectives. So think all I had was, you know, this pink breakout zone that I talk about, and then the 8.8s, right? You know, the full objective. And then a friend of mine who I traded with on the floor said, hey, have you ever noticed the market seems to get hung up around the halfway level, around right in the middle, right? We didn't call it halfway then. He's like, kind of gets hung up in the middle. And I was like, that's interesting. So I watched that, studied it, went back and did a bunch of back testing. I'm like, he's right. Great observation, right? Really smart guy. Super funny guy too. Great. Just lots of fun. Anyway, so I stay involved with him and kind of testing this stuff. Then I said, well, what about the quarters? What about the eights? And then I started looking at the math behind it, right? And then I started seeing, like, it's what's funny is, you know, if you look at the options derivative calculation, like the Black-Scholes formula, it's actually the same thing as the heat loss calculation that you would use if you're, you know, doing air conditioner calculations. So these crazy things and you know, cross over to different departments of expertise, you know, like just crazy stuff like that. You'll say, wait a minute, that calculation's the same as this calculation over here. What the heck, right? So that tells me all the math and all the things are connected. So anyway, that's how I developed this, was really just, you know, solid math based on natural law and fundamental things out there that looked at that. Then all of a sudden I ended up backing my way into realizing, wait a minute, I think this is no different than harmonic eights when you pluck a string on an instrument, or you get these overtones that come back on a musical instrument. So that's essentially how it came about. So when I talk about, you know, 1/8, 2/8, 3/8, are really just harmonic levels, right? We call that the harmonics. I just nickname it the harmonics. I mean, you know, I don't know what better thing to call it. But I just know that that's what we're looking at with these 1/8, 2/8, 3/8, 4/8 would be the halfway, 8/8 is the full upside objective, and so forth. And so that's what we're looking at. And the markets just tend to respond to this stuff. And that's what's so amazing to me. And we're going to look at this today in the charts, right? We're going to look at that in the stock market, because we're getting close to the 8/8, the full upside objective, in this 13% signal, right? 13% move in the NASDAQ, right? If you remember, the harmonics called, you know, laid out a full downside objective back in April at 19,232, right? The full downside objective in the NASDAQ. And that was a good spot, a line in the sand, as we like to call it, right? We don't know what's going to happen next, but it's a place where the energy's basically come out of the market. And we were, you know, full downside at the 19,232. And that was a spot to take a chance, right? We were in here. I know Rokish was nibbling. We were talking about quote unquote nibbling, right? You know, who would have thought we were going to see a 25% rally straight out of there, V bottom and just straight out of there. Okay, so now we're on the other side of another harmonic, a newer harmonic. This is pretty rare to have these harmonics back to back like this. I don't want to make it sound like we always have these harmonics on the stock market. But what we do now is we have a really nice carcass of eighth levels going all the way up over time. So if the market starts to, if it, we see it top out up here, and that's one of the things I want to ask today is, you know, in the chat, what do you think is going to happen with the market? We'll take a look at the charts here after we look at the economic data. But what do you think is happening with the market? Do you think we're going to go higher? Do you think we're getting ready to top out? And if you can not only just comment on that, but also, like, what are your reasons for it? Because that's more important. What I'd love to do is come up with a set of reasons as to why people think it's going higher, or reasons we think it's going lower. So generally, what's your consensus? You think it's higher? Now, granted, some stocks are going to go down and some are going to go up. But overall, just the overall market higher or lower, and then the reasons for that would be wonderful. We'll compile that. Maybe Frankie will get a kind of a feel on it by the end of the show. We can, you know, get a just kind of a, you know, tip of the finger, you know, one of these, right? You know, okay, which way do we think the wind's blowing based on the consensus in our chat room? And then what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about that as we get into the housing market. And then what we want to do is we'll come back and we're going to build a list. Frankie and I have been building a list of reasons we think, you know, the market can go higher, can top out. I don't want to give away kind of where I'm at, but again, right, back to the harmonics. If we're getting up to the 8.8s, I think it's pretty obvious where my position's at. So I don't want to blow it and bias the consensus. So again, what's your honest opinion, right? Not biased off what we talked about this morning or the harmonics, or maybe the harmonics, right? If that's what you're looking at now and watching this stuff. Make sense, Frankie?
Yes, sir. And the real OSS says he thinks that the market's going up. I like it.
All right. Okay, good. All right, so let's get into some of this economic data. I want to dive into this. All right. Oh, boy. Just a second. I've got some other work going on. I apologize. I got to move my
foot. No apologies necessary. I'm just glad we're up. We're running. I'm finding out, you know, Rumble Studio in general, it looks like they're down site-wide, so it's not us. There's a couple things going on in the background, but things are looking beautiful. We have a great crowd. Welcome. This is World HD, just to be clear. I've been doing some things in the background, but I'm here, guys. I'm here. All right.
Frankie is there. He's always there. Frankie's always in the background with LFA, solving problems. Okay, so here we go. Let's jump into this economic data. We've got, let's go look at the week again. Real, I want to blow through this pretty fast. Big takeaway was we had a few things on, nothing, not much on Monday. Although I do want to show you something. I highlighted China, and I want to go back and look at this here in a second. Something really crazy happened yesterday with some data out of China. We're watching China. We're watching Europe. We're watching Japan. Okay, these big outside influences, it can influence what's going on inside the U.S., all right? I mean, it's just crazy, right? I don't want to overhype it, but I think it's crazy. All right, then we had Tuesday, we had Royal Bank of Australia had a monetary policy statement. The reason we look at that is we want to see what is the rest of the world doing? Like, we're talking about cutting rates coming up, okay? You know, President Trump's been putting pressure on Jerome Powell, the chair of the Fed. Is President Trump going to get what he wants? It looks like he is. Scott Bessent's out today banging the drum, you know, promoting 50 basis point cut. A lot of analysts are now coming out. I think it's, we'll get to that, but a couple really heavy hitters are calling for 100 basis points. So that's basically 4 rate cuts. Probably not going to be a heavy one where you get, so 25 basis points is a quarter rate, right? So it's based on 100. 100 is 1% or 100 basis points. So if you hear me saying 25 basis points, just think that's like a quarter of a percent, all right? Or 50 basis points, a half a percent, or 100 basis points is 1%, right? It's just kind of the lingo. So again, you know, if you stick with it, this stuff kind of soaks up like a sponge over time. You just hear it a couple times, you're like, oh, I think I know what he's talking about. Okay. So again, no change out of Australia. And then we had our CPI data yesterday, pretty tame, right? Came in right at expectations. And that's feeding into this potential rate cut situation. There's a fear that the labor market's going to start to roll over. Yesterday, we ran the clip with Mary Daly, the San Francisco Fed president. And she's saying when labor starts to go, it goes really hard and it goes fast. This is why housing is so important, because when the construction workers, this is a great leading indicator. If construction starts to lay off workers, it's a leading indicator because it tends to... This is what she's talking about, right? We look for these first things to kick off. It's the housing construction sector that starts to lay people off, and then it tends to cascade throughout the economy, okay? So that's why housing is so important, why we want to focus on this today. We really want to try to get to that, okay? Then we get a couple of these Fed heads talking today, Barkin, Goolsbee, Bostic, and then we get PPI, Producer Price Index, tomorrow. One quick note on that. Last month, we saw the Producer Price Index come in way below expectations. And we talk about this being up the chain from consumer, right? The producers get seeing costs, then it trickles down to the consumer. If you think about these tariffs, right? All these people are saying, oh, tariffs are going to have a big impact. And President Trump's saying, no, they're not. Everybody else is saying, yes, they are. It's this constant battle going back and forth, and they don't quit. And he doesn't quit either. He keeps saying, no, it's not going to have a big impact. The point is this, if that's the case, and you think about, you know, goods coming from some other country, cross our border, through borders and customs, then to the corporations, then through, right, transfers through this whole, you know, financial, paper, physical process of moving goods in and out and putting a tariff on it. If it hits the producer first, you can assume that some of that can trickle down to the consumer. So that's why we watch the mechanism between that producer and the consumer to see. So last month, the producer price index was lower than expected. That means it was not a big surprise that consumer price index came in flat or even it could have come in down this month, right, yesterday on those earnings, on that report of the CPI. So again, that's why we're watching PPI tomorrow, Producer Price Index. Is it going to continue that trend of, if it comes in flat to down, guess what the Fed's going to do? More talks of rate cuts. Okay, so that's why we're looking at this stuff, right? How are they thinking about this? How are the people out there thinking? How are they going to make these decisions on these rate cuts? And then we finish out the week this week with retail sales, Empire State Manufacturing, a couple numbers that I like to watch. And then the... non-beloved preliminary University of Michigan sentiment, which we take a chance to pound on that anytime we can, right, Frankie? At least I do. Maybe you're coming along with me on that one. Okay.
I've been on that train for a while, Craig. You dragged me right onto it. It's easy.
All right, good.
Hard to get off.
All right, good. All right, so then let's see. We've got what am I looking at here, Tuesday? I don't know if this is correct. This was a reflection of yesterday's. I think this is right. So all we really want to look at here is U.S. core CPI month over month was expected at 0.3, came in at 0.3. And then we get this federal budget balance, okay, out of the U.S. Now, keep this in mind, right? 206, 291. Maybe I'll pull that chart up here in a second, but let's jump over here. This is where I want to show you. Let me see if I want to go on to any of Wednesday's stuff first before we do that. Here it is. Let's do this now. So first to the top of that list is China new loans. All right, look at this stuff. This is great. Okay, here we go. So this is the China new loans. So we've got data going back to 2007, and you can see these blue lines continuing this upward trend. All right, make sure I've got my, hopefully I can control this a little bit. There we go. Okay, so we've got this thing, you know, trending up since 2007, right? No negative prints, not a single negative print over this whole period of time. So we're talking almost 20 years. And guess what we just got last night? The first negative print, Frankie. It was expected to come in at, what was the number? $305 billion for new loans out of China, and it came in at minus $50 billion, the first negative print in 20-some years, right? So this is significant, right? This is the kind of stuff we're watching for. I haven't seen it covered in the news media today. I haven't seen anything go on about it, but there it is, right? Negative print. So these are the kind of things we're watching for because these have influences around the world. What's going on here? Probably President Trump stealing all the foreign direct investment that had been going into China into the U.S. Okay, so let me scroll up here too and take a look at this. I want to look at this U.S. one just so we can get a look at our that one data point out of the U.S. from yesterday. Let's see here. What was the one we were looking at there? The debt, the federal budget balance. Let's take a look at this one, federal budget balance. Okay, so again, in this particular case, not good, right? A negative read. So that's the bar all the way to the right, okay? The furthest bar to the right. Came in at minus, 291, and it was expected at 206. So below expectations, right? Not good. But again, look at it relative to the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. Not that big of a deal. Let me blow this out just a little bit more, okay? So again, not outrageous. A low read, but not outrageous relative to history going way back in a similar time frame with China. Now, these aren't apples to apples comparisons, but I think it shows us there's a potential risk out here for everybody, right, on the debt side of things, right, running these fiscal deficits, okay? China, new loans, that's a big deal. Like, what's going on in China? I want to show you this, too. I didn't know where to fit it in, but now I think I loaded this up. Yeah, I got this loaded up. Let me show you this, too. This is pretty interesting. I was watching this last night, and I didn't know if I'd have a chance to show it. Let's pull this in here. Okay, so this is China's economic protests spiking late last year. All right, so again, you can see we're already at whatever this means. I don't even know what the value is, 200. You can just see that, you know, it's from the lower left to the upper right, so the trend is to the upside, again, on economic protests. So, you know, we're trying to figure out, put ourselves in the shoes of other countries and figure out where they stand. This isn't good. Like, I'm back and forth, right? Last week, I was talking about how I think if I were in the shoes of the consumer in China, I would probably not be feeling that great. And then we got this report. I was watching this, you know, little video clip of China, and all of a sudden they're saying, oh, everything's great in China. The people are happy. Life's been going well for them. What did I get here? All right, sorry about that. I was going to put myself in there. All right. And then yesterday I kind of backtracked on that because of that report. And I'm like, I don't really know what's going on. Like, what's going on in that society of 1.2 whatever billion people? But here you go, right? I saw this and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to backtrack again tomorrow on this and flip around the other side. I think there's something going on, right? People aren't real happy. And again, why? If these new loans is something, this is something that's going to be coming down the pipe to China. If they can't get foreign direct investment, if they can't keep faking it, right, putting out cheap steel, if they can't keep making more electric vehicles than the world can absorb, if they can't stop undercutting everyone, if they can't keep doing that like they have been because they're getting, you know, foreign direct investment in there with this kind of hyped up story of they're the economic growth engine of the world, then all of a sudden things start to change. You're going to get more economic protests, right? It's going to trickle down to the people, okay? And again, this is why I think Scott Bessent, President Trump, keep delaying. Yesterday we saw the 90-day truce on the China trade tariffs get extended again. I think they're going to keep extending this out and out and out and out until the people of China basically take action, and they're the ones that show their what's the right word? Their lack of trust, their lack of faith, I'm looking for the right word, Frankie. What's the right word? I think you get my point, right? Their unhappiness, their unease with what's going on in their society, right? And so these are the things we're looking at. The data, first negative read on China new loans in 25 years, 20 years, 20 plus years, 20 some years. And then we see this, the protests on the rise. So again, there's a chance to insert that. I wanted to insert that in there. All right. So anything on that, Frankie? I ask you and then I cut you off. I apologize.
No, all good. I mean, it is, and I am seeing the chat too. It's just there's just a lot of things pointing to war. Am I wrong? Am I right about that? A lot.
Yeah. Well, and we get these talks, right, with President Trump and Putin on Friday. All right, we'll get into that here in a second. But let me finish up this economic data. So we get this, again, external influences on the U.S. German 10-year note auction was expected at 2.69 rate, 1.4 bid to cover. It actually came in a little bit worse than expected. I didn't get that input in here. It just came in this morning, so I didn't get it put in. Let me see what it was, though. It came in a little bit. So it was expected at that. It came in at 2.69, 1.4. No, it was expected at 2.62, 1.5, and it came in at 2.69, 1.4. So I must have put that in there wrong. Anyway, the bid to cover was slightly worse than expected, meaning not as many people, less people than expected showed up to buy that debt. Okay, that's what we're looking for. Is the world continuing to absorb all the debt that the government in the system keeps pushing out into the system? All right. Okay, and then today we get a couple FOMC speakers, a couple goofballs in the Fed speaking. We get Barkin, Goolsbee, and Bostic. Again, this matters because what are they going to say about rate cuts? Are they going to start coming over too? Are they going to start coming across the line to President Trump's side? Because again, Jerome Powell's getting outnumbered. It's the good old system of, you know, he kind of had the court, and now all of a sudden the court's been taken away from him. And with all the things we've been talking about, right, the replacement of Kugler with Mehren, President Trump's economic council, lead economic council. So this whole shift that's taking place, and again, it's not so much about replacing Jerome Powell. I think it's about the apparatus, right? Going after the apparatus of the central banking system. That's what we're watching for, okay? All right, shifting gears. We got today's energy day, so we got crude oil inventories out today. That's why we make Wednesday the crude oil, the Wednesday's energy day, because crude oil inventories, because carbon has been such a big deal for us, you know, through the years, but we're starting to see a change in that. Okay. We're starting to see other forms of energy. Look, we're still not getting away from carbon, but by any means, right? But we're seeing more nuclear, more chance of these small nuclear reactors. And we're going to cover that stuff here in a minute. Okay. So I think we're good there. And Australia employment out. President Trump speaks at 10:30 this morning. I don't know exactly what that's about, but it'll probably be an array of things like usual. He'll cover everything under the sun. And we'll obviously watching for headlines there to see if anything new comes up. Probably going to be centered around Friday's meeting with Putin, I would imagine. Anything on that, Frankie? Any other thoughts? I think that's front and center, right?
Yeah, just very curious on where it's going to go. It's like, I feel like this is one of those things where no one just leaves and there's just nothing happens. It's just either Putin basically gives the middle finger or something actually progresses in a good way. We'll see. All eyes on that.
And we'll jump into that here in a second, a little bit deeper. Okay. And then we get Australian employment again, watching to see. We saw that terrible number come out in Canada, right? It was expected to be a positive print and it came in negative. So terrible employment data coming out of Canada early this week. Want to see if that happens in Australia. Why do we care about Canada and Australia so much? Well, because they're big commodity countries, all right? They make their business around commodities and selling commodities in the market, so their currencies are based around commodities. Gives us an indication that that there's a commodity pressure. There's not as much demand for commodities out there as people would think, right? If these economies aren't flourishing, if these commodity-based economies aren't flourishing. Okay.
By the way, just the chat is mentioning it, but Australia, they banned machetes.
When?
The article, someone mentioned it, but the article's from May 25th. Australia fast tracks first ever machete ban after weekend attack. Just stop letting the migrants in that are crazy. No one's just running around with machetes. Just kill it. Like, stop letting the migrants in. Just stop. What are we doing? I can't. This is good. This is fun, little. It's make my day. All right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's good input. Good input. That's why we love our chat, right? Always some good stuff in there. All right. So 16th record high in the S&P for 2025. And we're on highs. Okay. And the NASDAQ's even further. And we'll look at those. Well, let's just look at those charts right now. Let's just do it instead of talking around. And then we'll come back to this. Okay. So let me go to this. We got a lot of charts to look at today. I want to go to the NASDAQ first. Let me go over to this. I'll switch to this. Okay. All right, so here we go. All right, the big deal here, two things I want to point out, right? We got up to the 7.8s last week, all right, and I'm going to go ahead and mark that. Let's mark that in a rectangle. So again, back to the question on the 8s, all right? Here's the 7.8s, right? That light blue line at 23,827, all right, in the NASDAQ. And then we see this pullback into the halfway, okay, the dark green line, right? This is that halfway. Remember when I was saying my buddy said, hey, you notice that halfway seems to be important, right? Well, look back at this. The halfway was really important on this. Came up, stopped there. Once it got through, then it held there. Okay, so again, resistance became support. That's what we want to see around this halfway. That's exactly what my buddy pointed out to me 30 years ago or whatever it was when he said, hey, you realize that halfway seems to be important. And there it is. And then we come all the way back from that 7/8 down to the halfway. And then we bounce right out of there. Again, we don't know which harmonic it's going to react to. I've got little tools that help me try to figure that out. But it's just nature, right? I mean, it's the way it works. Now, one of the things I do want to show is, we'll do it on the S&P. Let's look at it on the S&P because I think it's a better case in point. Anyway, NASDAQ's getting close to that bright green line. We've been talking about this for quite some time. Really, since the end of May, is that, you know, if we break out to the upside, then it's a 13% move. Now we're down to like less than 1%. So 12% of the move has been gobbled up. And we got about 1% left to get to that bright green line. And we should see a reaction there, kind of like we saw at the dark green line. Does it blow through? Does it stop there? What's going to go on? Well, let's take a look at the S&P. All right. And that upside level is 24,165. The bright green line is 24,165. And that's a September futures contract. So you can find that out there. And, you know, if you look, you can find the futures price and kind of monitor that if you want. All right. Here is the, let me go to the S&P. All right, here we go. So here's the S&P, not quite above its 7/8, right? It's just getting to that light blue line. So it's lagging, right? Here's the question. You know, if the NASDAQ gets to that bright green line, does it stop and hold there? Does it punch through a little bit, allowing the S&P to come up and reach its full upside objective at the bright green line? The S&P's full, because it's lagging a little bit, right? It's a little bit behind. So is it going to play catch up? Is the NASDAQ going to stop at the full upside and the S&P comes up short? These are the things we want to see. Now, what would be really nice, I call it synchronization. When the NASDAQ goes up there and kind of hovers around that level and it allows the S&P to come up to the bright green line. We'll see if that's what we get, some kind of a synchronization or whatever. You know, maybe it has no response to it at all. That's a possibility too. But I kind of think based on the way it's been reacting, we're going to see something happen at that bright green line. I want to see, I've been saying that. I'm excited to see what happens at this bright green line because I think, well, I'll save it. I don't want to get going. Please put your comments in there. Do you think the market's going higher or lower? And the reasons why. I'll save my thoughts on this. Okay. So that being said, that's what we're watching for in the S&P. We saw the same thing, right? Came back, retested the halfway. We saw the same thing on the upside, right? A little bit of resistance on the way up at the halfway. Pop through, the ceiling becomes the floor, comes back, retests that bright green line, and then it's up, up, and away. So again, we're using these levels to help manage the risk. We don't never know what's going to happen next, but if we have some kind of a line in the sand, it helps us make decisions and wring the risk out of the equation, right? And then it allows us to get... If we can take care of the risk, then the upside takes the gains take care of themselves, right? So we're mostly risk managers in here. We're using these harmonics to manage the risk. Okay, so that's the question. You know, the full upside objective at 65.74. Now, red flag, Dow, keep talking about this. I've got them in red, right? The prior red was 12 straight down days. The media never covered it. It was a heads up that the market, something was wrong with the market. And then we see the crash. You know, we see a retest of that after the two yellow circles up there. This one, right? This is the end of 2024 back in here, okay? And then this is the beginning of 2025. We see a retest of the highs, but that red spot right in there, that was the kickoff. That with a couple other things we've talked about over and over and over again. That was the red flag. Market sells off, plain vanilla correction, right back into the moving average. And then we see a retest of the highs with the Dow, but it can't punch through. Red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag. Okay, I just want to say that, all right? Okay, now, let's take a look at the, let's jump outside the US for a second here and take a look at this. I want to look at the Nikkei. So this is a monthly chart of the Nikkei going all the way back in the late 1980s. So this high right back in here was 1990, okay, that yellow circle with the purple box around it. Now, we just broke through that. Okay, as the Nikkei got up to this level last year, last August, September, we saw the carry trade come off. We saw a lot of volatility take place. You can't even almost see it in there, but a big sell-off, then a big recovery, really fast. So the question is, did it blow off a lot of steam? It had to blow off some steam, right? At some point, these markets just can't keep marching without at least some kind of a pressure relief valve, right? You know, it's like a steam, you know, it's like when you boil water, right? You got to have some vent, you know, the whistle, right? Whatever, some venting or the thing will explode, right? The pressure just has to be released. And that's what we saw in the Nikkei, right? It had a big refresh in August with the the blow up of the carry trade, the Nikkei had a massive sell-off, biggest sell-off, I think, at least in 20 years, if not of all time. And then the biggest recovery of all time, right? Really fast down, really fast up. My big fear is if we don't have fast and we have something slow. Okay. So we're so used to fast. We're so conditioned to market sells off and we just, everybody's like conditioned to buy the dip, right? Because that's the faster you can buy it, the better. If we see something slow happen, I start to get concerned because a statement that you can hang on to, right? Markets tend to climb a wall of worry, right? That's how they go up. They go down on hope. Right. So they sell hope to you on the way down. You kind of think, wait a minute, it's kind of it sounds reverse. Like I should be hopeful the market's going up, but it's actually markets climb a wall of worry and then they go down on hope. All right. So if they start selling hope, that's a bear market. Right. OK, so that's the Nikkei. Let's take a look at this one. This is the German DAX. So we saw all the way back into, late, 1990, same kind of time frame as that Nikkei. Okay, we see this linear upward sloping trend channel. And you can see it follows us pretty nicely. I got all the time frames marked 2000, 2003, 2008, the sell-off there, 2015, right? We had a couple debacles in there with flash crashes and SARS, I think, some Obama things, whatever, And then we go nonlinear, right? We break outside this trend channel up into that green space. Okay, we go nonlinear. So again, this DAX, the German DAX, again, the German economy is pretty much falling apart and the German DAX is going through the roof. So, you tell me, okay? So, and they're behind it, right? The whole media is behind the whole thing and, their fund managers are moving money to Europe and everything else. So again, to me, red flag stuff, all right? So what are we going to see here? We're just going to keep monitoring this, right? What's the impact on this? All right. And I think we're pretty good there. All right. So let me come back in. Let's get back to a couple of these headlines. We got some stuff to plow through. And then I want to get through some of these headlines. So again, 16th record high in the S&P for 2025 so far. Watching to see these harmonics, NASDAQ, S&P, what does the Dow do? I don't think the Dow's breaking to new highs before we get to the upside harmonics in these others. So Dow's sort of out of the question, but again, keep it in the back of our mind that it can't rally to new highs. We also see the Russell 2000. It's not performing very well either, so it's struggling, all right? All right, CoreWeave shakes confidence, okay? So what's this CoreWeave, right? I'm going to blow through these really fast. This is in the AI build out. Okay. What they said yesterday was the costs are widening between the AI build out and it's not good, right? This is just sort of a thing. Somebody's going to take the hit, right? When you're pumping, it's kind of like the NASDAQ bubble. When you keep pumping money in, somebody's like going to get caught in the shuffle, right? Someone's going to get caught under the wheels. And these are the kind of things, right? Everybody's spending like crazy and trying to make things happen. And rather than being more thoughtful, it's kind of just this race, right? When you're in a race, when you're in a race out the door, you're more likely to forget something than if you're thoughtful. You're like, okay, do I have this? Do I have that? All right, what am I going to need when I get there, right? If you're doing that, you're less likely to forget something than if you're racing out the door. Same kind of a thing here, right? These people are just racing, acquiring talent, doing whatever they can to get involved in this race and compete in this race. So again, things like this, things are going to happen, right? Things are going to break when you're doing that, all right? And then we've got this other headline of Circle. Okay, so Circle's a stablecoin issuer. They backed the USDC, the second largest stablecoin on the market. The stock is sliding on share sales of large company corporate interest selling. Okay, so even the CEO has been involved in this. 10 million shares of stock, they're dumping it, or they're attempting to dump it. If it's small and it's pre-thought out, right, and it's just a... These CEOs get these stock options, right? And that's a normal process for them to take these things in and then liquidate some over time. It's just a normal process. But when something's out of the norm and they're dumping something irregularly, that's when the market says, hold on, these guys know something, right? So that's the question. Is that what happened with Circle? Are these CEOs dumping shares? 10 million shares, a lot of stock to dump on the market, okay? So that's something to think about, right? Then we have this Cava again, maybe a little canary. It's a little new fast food chain that had an IPO in 2023, Mediterranean style food. The kind of thing where you walk in, kind of like a Chipotle, but Mediterranean. You know this one, Frankie? I've never eaten at one of these.
So my brother, he's a big health guy, right? He's the guy, I'm the taller brother, but he's the jacked, cares about his body and health. And we're a little different in those senses. And he's that guy. He's like, dude, we got to go to Cava. Chipotle's, got the seed oils, this is healthy. We got to go there. We go to this place. We're picking through and my brother's looking down in horror. I'm like, what? He looks down and there's a cockroach in his plate. That was my first and only Cava experience. My brother telling me, you got to go there, shaming me. And he gets the cockroach in his dish. So, you know, that's just a
beautiful. But no seed oils.
No seed oils.
Yeah. I'm a fan of avoiding the seed oils whenever you can too, but you know, but anyway, so I'm kind of with your brother, but cockroach delight. All right. Okay. So, next one here is, so is Cava a canary in the coal mine? And what do I mean by that? They had a drop of 23% in their share, warning of softer sales ahead, warning of softening consumer. Chipotle stressing concerns of weakening as well. So if we're going to put Cava and Chipotle in there together, both seeing some signs of a weakening consumer, right? Something to think about there as we approach these full upside objectives and these harmonics. We get the National Guard troops in DC. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention, this company called Perplexity, Frankie, I just saw this morning. They made a long shot bid for $34.5 billion to buy Chrome.
Oh.
Crazy, right? Several investors, large venture capital funds agreed to back this transaction. That's all I know at this point. Want to pay attention to this. Maybe Frankie can do a little poking around. I don't know if anything else has come out since I saw the headline this morning. I don't know what it's all about, but to me, that seems like a big deal. One, it's VC, big amount of money, and it's to buy Chrome. So again, are they dumping Chrome, Frankie, because of AI? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so that's interesting because, oh, wow. That's getting a lot of, you know, I'm going to have to sit on that, but yeah, first thought would be that AI, their AI model, it is kind of been implemented through Chrome the same way you'd Google something in the past. Now it's kind of AI kind of trying to push it towards you. I wonder if it would be, we're going to give you this package without AI. That's actually terrifying to think how powerful AI is for Google to just be like, yeah, we'll sell Chrome, our biggest product ever. Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll dig into that. I think there's something cooking there. Again, big transaction, $35 billion. Again, we just get so used to these trillions and billions, but that's not chump change, right? And it's kind of, so again, you know, back down to reality here. $35 billion is a lot of money. All right. The next one, National Guard troops in D.C., supposed uncertainty over the command of the D.C. police. LFA is going to hammer this today, I would imagine, right? I can't imagine they're not going to hammer this and really do a great job of covering this. But all I want to say is the D.C. police are probably wondering if they still stay in control, and the White House is continuing to project clear control over the situation. This might be what part of President Trump is going to be speaking about today at 10:30. So again, Putin is going to be front and center, and so is this, right? This is a big deal, I think. These are probably the two biggest deals that speech is going to center around. Any other thoughts on that, Frankie? Are you good with that?
Good with that. I'm very interested on how that's going to happen, though, this whole D.C. Push.
Yeah. And then we've got this, before Trump and Putin meet, all right, this is interesting. Germany's Friedrich Merz and other Europeans want to bend Trump's ear. So they're going to be in a video conference call later today. The vibe must be that something is getting close, okay, because they're all scrambling, right, with big stakes jockeying for position and outcome. Europe needs this war, right? I mean, as Frankie was saying, you hear the war drums continue to beat. Again, they're not super loud, they're not on our doorstep, but they're beating out there. And the question is, can President Trump defuse this war? And is that really the intent, is to defuse this war? And so this is a big deal this week. All right. So again, Zelensky and the EU leaders won't be at the table on Friday. Okay. And it's a bit funny if you think, let it sink in a little bit, that, you know, the diminishing of Zelensky I mean, he's never really been a respected leader. I don't know. If this guy isn't the definition of a puppet, Frankie, I don't know who is. I mean, he's never really had respect from the beginning. President Trump's never really given him respect if he deserves it, but he hasn't deserved much of it. And Europe just throws this guy around like a rag doll.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly like the perfect CIA, you know, put him in. It's becoming a situation where, honestly, after Trump, I'm almost terrified. Everyone, in my opinion, will become like a Manchurian candidate, right? Where it's just like, it's a Carney. It's a, what's his face from Macron. It's all these people that are just put in, you know, they have their backers. They're not impressive. They're not smart, but they're pushed into our, you know, just they're fueled into the ether. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, also, real quick, I did check, and this whole thing with Google and Chrome, Google's actually being forced to sell it because of anti-privacy or something like that. The U.S. Department of Justice is actually trying to get them for an antitrust case. So it's all because they have to.
All right. That softens the blow a little bit there.
Yeah.
All right, good. Nice work, Frankie. Okay, so Zelensky says that Ukraine won't give up the Donbass. Wouldn't it be almost comical if President Trump makes a deal to give up the Donbass?
Well, it's just like, we will not give it up. But what if it's one big hole, one big crater? Like, at that point, was it worth it? Was it worth keeping? You know, at what point?
Yeah.
Where's Murr's mommy in the chat?
There's mommy, yeah. So, again, watching to see what happens. A conference call today with the EU, with the European leaders, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this, Frankie. I think we're going to learn in the next couple of days the direction of all this stuff. Is it getting diffused, or is this just, I don't know. I'm just going to refrain comments on that because I don't really know what's going to happen. I think it's going to build tension into Friday for sure, into the meeting in Alaska with President Trump and President Putin. Okay, let's take a look. We mentioned this. Bessent is out campaigning for 50 basis point rate cut. We also have another character out there, Jim Bullard. He used to run the St. Louis branch of the Federal Reserve. Okay, St. Louis is known for a lot of economic data coming out of there, right? I think that's where they do all the Fred data, the Federal Reserve data. I think it mostly comes out of St. Louis. So again, kind of the quantitative component, a quantitative component to the Fed's inputs, right, comes out of St. Louis. Bullard's out saying 100 basis point rate cut. Here's the interesting thing, Frankie, is that Bessent, it normally, right, the Fed doesn't comment on the dollar, okay? That's more the comment of the Treasury, and they always say, we believe in a strong dollar, right? Strong dollar policy, right? But that's left to the Fed. That's left to the Treasury, right? And the Treasury doesn't comment on Fed policy. But here we see Scott Bessent out clearly commenting on Fed policy. He's out, basically, I think he's on Bloomberg now, or he was this morning, or he's coming on there. He's going to be out campaigning for this 50 basis point rate cut. Again, it's attack on the apparatus, right? This is another sign, this attack on the apparatus and not Jerome Powell. This is bigger than Jerome Powell, much bigger than Jerome Powell, what's going on here. It's a clear confrontation with the Federal Reserve in ways we haven't seen before. And I just want to point that stuff out. Okay, so that's what we're looking for, continued pressure on rate cuts, all right? And then since it's Energy Day, I want to throw this one out there. The IEAE cast shade on the outlook for energy, all right? So let's take a look at a couple of these charts. And while we're doing that, I'll talk about this because I want to talk through some of this stuff. We've got crude oil here. Let me go to this and then...
The spaceship. Okay, you've entered the spaceship.
Okay, here we go. So we have the crude oil. Again, $79.37. We covered that, I think, 2 weeks ago. The importance of that going all the way back to Hamas, Israel stand down with Hamas. Okay, we made that pretty clear. And the harmonics, again, these harmonics, this is back to the original question. You know, to me, the harmonics help connect the world, right? It's this underlying weave that's going through things, right? The whole world's, all 8 billion of us are connected in one way or another. And a part of it's through markets, right? Supply and demand of different things. Again, fear and greed. The sun rises, the sun sets. When the sun rises, things get warmed up. They heat, things rise. When the sun sets, things cool down. The wind dies down. It's this stuff that just goes round and round and round. And I think these harmonics are this weave that kind of goes through the whole energy of people. It's something we probably can't even understand yet, right? I have thoughts on it, but it's complicated. Anyway, the point is this. We have this pink shaded zone, okay? We have the 6318 that we've been talking about, right? We're bound by the 7937. We're bound by the 6318. Across the Middle East, with Israel, with Iran, with all these conflicts that have been going on. So we have that backdrop, right? This up here, the 7937, that bright dash green line, and the 6318. We get this new harmonic structure, which again, I'm skeptical of, okay, because I know kind of, again, remember, I know how this stuff's created, and I know it's a little bit, I'm watching this. However, if we get below 6318, which is right below this pink shaded zone, all of a sudden it starts to make life easy on the short side in crude oil. And the real takeaway I want to put on this is we ran some clips, it's been probably about a month ago, but we saw some of these, they were at an OPEC Plus meeting somewhere over in Europe, and they talked to a couple of the head people, right? Big producers of crude oil and natural gas and the big carbon-based energy. And these European leaders said, or these European leaders of these companies and, you know, figureheads around the energy industry said, we're afraid of crude oil in the $50 range, right? And they're very concerned about that. What does that also do? It can roll over to banks. See, that's the thing people don't think about is these banks hold a lot of loans on this stuff. If these guys start not being able to make profit because crude oil drops too low, what happens, right? All of a sudden, they start cutting supply, trying to try again. This is the whole concept of OPEC, right? Was they could open and restrict the supply of crude oil and keep prices stable, right? That was their whole premise. Problem is that seems to be falling apart. Okay, so who's in control of the crude oil market at this point? Who's in control of the energy? Is it the people? Is it demand? Is it actually a fairly traded market right now? And if it is, the 63.18 is going to help give us guidance. If crude oil can stay below 63.18, it's another. Not only do we have that, but we have this pink shaded zone, which is an energy breakout zone for another harmonic. I start to put more faith in it if it's on the downside. I get a little more concerned with it if it's on the upside. Again, we've talked about this bear put spread. I think the crude oil market's drifting sideways to down, right? If we look at the bigger picture, we've done this many times, the weekly and the monthly chart. We've got this converging triangle. We're past the apex of the triangle. It looks like crude oil's headed down. And we're just monitoring that whole situation to see, like, is it headed down? And what's the best way to play that? And that is time, right? Basically writing a bear put spread, calls and puts to take in premium. And it just becomes a numbers game. We're just trying to get it right 8 out of 10 times. And we know at some point there's going to be a spike. We're going to hit a max loss. But if we can hit max gain 5 or 6 times and we have some gain, you know, another 2 or 3 times, it just becomes a numbers game. And it's a great way to trade the crude oil to the downside because you have limited risk on the upside. You have limited gain on the downside. You're really just playing a range and doing it over and over and over again, right? Instead of taking a direct outright big position where you have a lot of risk. Okay, so hopefully that makes some sense. Let's look at this natural gas. I want to take a look at this. Again, natural gas, longer term, all right, I want to look at this first. Longer term, things look good. I've got this orange strip going across the screen. It shows a lot of touch points in the natural gas market. Again, it stayed below this orange zone for a while, and I've got that green box marked where it popped above, and now it's come back and retested that orange zone multiple times. And what is it doing right now? It's testing it again right around in here. So again, it's hanging by a thread. The natural gas market's hanging by a thread. It loves to press and see how far it can take things, and that might be what it's doing here. If we look at the harmonic structure we have on this, again, we got to the upside halfway. We've rolled contracts, so these prior circles back in here. Natural gas came up and hit it again, sold off. So again, it was between the breakout zone, the pink shaded zone, and the dark green line, traded that range multiple times, and then it's broken down through it, and now we came up and retested it here, right there. Okay, so this is a little eerie for the natural gas market. You know, we have to manage risk much lower, and we're going to, for those who are long the natural gas, again, we need to start thinking about in the near future, if this doesn't turn around, we're going to have to start trimming back a little of the position. Doesn't mean you have to dump it, but we want to probably start trimming some back. It's easy to get back in, right? But we have to control the potential losses here. All right, so that's the natural gas. I want to introduce 2 new markets here that we haven't looked at, only for perspective. This is called RBOB gas, right? So this is New York Harbor RBOB gas. So this is gasoline, right? This is a good proxy for gasoline. Big thing here is this is a weekly chart. So you can see mostly this market's been flat to side, pretty much sideways the whole time with one big run up through this whole period, right? Through this window of time. Let me switch over to this. From this low back here to this high, that was time frame. Let me give you a window of time when that occurred. So we're looking at, you know, 2020, March of 2020. Okay. And then, right, we had COVID, we had a lot of things going on, inflation, right? This drive for inflation under the Biden administration that they didn't tell us about, but clearly they were driving for inflation because President Trump left us with almost no inflation, right? When he left office, Biden comes in, we get rampant inflation. Now, President Trump's trying to use tariffs and other things to get inflation back down again for the consumer. This is what happened under Biden, right? We see this huge underlying thing happen in natural gas. Same thing happened, kind of happened in crude oil to some degree too. It happened in food, happened in live cattle. We're seeing live cattle hit record highs. We're seeing a lot of things go on. We're depressing food prices. You know, it's just a lot of things going on that we're trying to, I think, destroy the market for we the people. And this is one of them, right? I just wanted to show that from a RBOB gasoline perspective. Let's take a look at this one. This is the heating oil market. I'm sorry, this isn't the heating oil market. Let me go to this one. Here's the heating oil market. I know what I did with that. Here we go. Here's the heating oil market. Okay, so this goes all the way back to the late 1970s back in here. And we see, you know, kind of sideways, big run up, some choppy movement, nice consolidation, trend channel in here, right, to measure risk against. Broke out here in like 2021, and it's still living above that. So I would say the trend is still up on the heating oil. But I still feel downward pressure, right? Taking in the gasoline and taking in heating oil, other carbon components, right, in the carbon chain, there I see overall flat to weakness in these markets. So let that buy us back to crude oil, let it buy us back to natural gas. I still think natural gas important. We ran some stuff last week at this time on the on natural gas being that big gap filler between small nuclear reactors and you know, next forms of energy, right? It's the big gap filler. Natural gas is in huge demand with all these data centers and everything else. And with that, Frankie, I think what we can do is let's run this clip here on Chris Wright talking about energy and this climate alarmist thing, right? Natural gas solved the problem from all the climate goofballs who are, you know, but it also is a great cheap resource for for just flat out energy, whether it's for data centers or people, right? It's just a great energy source. And here's Chris Wright talking about that.
We're in the early stages of a super cycle for private markets, and that's driven by...
Oh, this is the wrong one, Frankie.
Hold on.
I think it's... We can skip it if you don't have it.
One second. Bit of a few wrenches put in the mix this morning. Yeah.
You mean to skip it?
Yes, for now.
Okay, let me go on and let me know when you're ready. I want to show this one too. I know Vrokish has had this Oklo on. I want to look at this Oklo because this is a small nuclear reactor. We've got some clips to run on that. We may not run those today just for sake of time. But the here's Oklo, and what I want to show is a place to manage the risk, right? So this is Oklo is a, they're on the forefront edge of small nuclear reactors. Okay. And it looks like, you know, the company came public in, I don't know, not that long. Is that right? Is it that recent? No, it goes all the way back into here. So like 2021, looks like June of 2021. So here's a daily chart on Oklo. You can see the trend is clearly up, right? But we're getting pretty high levels up in here, right? We're getting to a point where we could see some kind of a pullback. So let's figure out where we can manage the risk on this. If we look at this, okay, we've got its prior high, and I've put on here these touch points, right, in yellow circles. So this is a place where Oklo seems to have reacted, right? Right around this 68.50 to 71.40 level. So basically a $3 range, 68.50 to 71.50. In that range, there's been a lot of touch points for Oklo. Came back down and just recently tested and spiked up off that. So if someone's looking at this Oklo for a big long-term play, okay, and wanting to take that kind of risk with Oklo, small nuclear reactors, again, a lot of regulatory issues, permitting issues, things like that, it's going to require the AI group, President Trump, you know, the regulatory system to approve these small nuclear reactors that can be co-located near the data centers and in different locations. It's going to require a lot of push, right? Because normally nuclear reactors can take 10, 15, 20 years for regulatory approvals. So if someone's willing to get into this space and do this Oklo, there's the risk management levels, at least short term, right? 68.50 to 71.50. And I think that's good. Do we have that one ready to run, Frankie, or are we just going to skip it? No good?
I'm having issues.
Okay.
Working on it.
Do we have any? We have that other one, though. I don't think we'll get to that. But let me go through this. Here's an interesting one. And then we'll get our – do we have any input from the chat, Frankie, on the polls yet? Do we have anybody commenting on up, down, and reasons why?
We had a lot of ups. I didn't. I'll go back through it.
Okay, go ahead and go through that. I'm going to go through this. So let me do this. I'm going to cut. This is kind of an oddball thing. It's one of these things that catches you. I'm just going to go to this full screen. It's one of these things that I talk about here sometimes. It just catches your. It's like a barb, right? It doesn't create a. It doesn't make a big gash or a big wound, but it kind of strikes you. It hurts, right? You know, it doesn't. You're like, ow, that really hurts, but there's hardly any blood and there's hardly any gouge. This is one of those things. Right. Again, our job is to trust, verify, and then question things. Right. So, again, this is kind of an interesting thing. There's a guy in UK called Nigel Farage. Right. He's leader of the UK Reform Party. All right. And he's had murder attempts on him in the past. Right. He's kind of an outspoken guy. Most people probably know who he is. And I think it was like they attempted to blow his car up one time or take his brakes out or something like that. Right. Well, J.D. Vance was in UK on a summer break. Okay. On unofficial business, and he meets with, he's planning to meet with Farage for breakfast. All right, okay, no big deal, right? Well, a little bit of a deal, right? So it's not normal for a VP to meet with a prime minister or a potential prime minister in this particular case. Now, it could just be friends and everything else, right? So Trump had met with Keir Starmer at Turnberry a couple weeks ago, all right, at the golf course, and they had a lot of meetings there. Vance has his buddy called David Lammy, all right, who's involved in the whole UK political scene. right? So not only is Vance and Farage, okay, they're somewhat politically aligned. And I guess to some that we can spend a minute or two on this. All right, so here's the situation is the guy on the right is in the UK is what they're called Tories, all right? And the leader of the Tory party is a guy named Kemi Badenoch. Vance isn't meeting with him while he's over there. Now, they say it's just a conflict in scheduling and so forth. People kind of picked up on this a little bit. And this is a subtle little thing that's going underneath the surface. I think everybody thinks Vance is probably slated as the next generation of leadership in the U.S. And Nigel Farage potentially leading this independent party. His party is called the, let me get this straight. It's just so hard to keep some of this stuff straight. But we've got Farage, UK's Reform Party, right? So it's kind of in the middle. It's this third party, right? You got the left, you got the right, now you got this middle party. And Vance is really curious about how Farage is doing this, right? Is he peaking too soon? But Farage is definitely in the leader seat or in a very good position, right? To potentially have this third party, this middle party, this Reform Party, pop up and exert its will as becoming, you know, the next leadership in the UK. So here's Vance meeting with this guy, curiosity, right? While he's there on a summer break. And here's the thing I want to point out, right, is that we've had Courtney Turner on here talking about this technocracy. And we question J.D. Vance's background just a little bit, right? We're questioning things. Again, trust but verify. And that's what we're doing here. Is this kind of some kind of a setup, right, where, you know, what we want to watch for is this. Is there going to be a third party formed in the U.S., okay, a technocracy type of a party? That's what I'm watching for, right? We see this technocracy movement with the digital coins. We see it going on with, again, all these, you know, the data centers, all the things we talk about in here all the time, right? This energy building in that space. And what is that going to require? A technocracy party of some name, right? What would it be called? Is that what Farage is doing? Is that what J.D. Vance is kind of, I don't know, right? It's one of those things that catches you. And I just want to raise the curiosity out there because I think that's our job. And so I'm just going to tuck it away in my memory, right? Because I think it's strange around the edges. Right, just the whole situation of how this came about, you know, is Vance positioning for something, right? It's not really being covered by the mainstream media from what I think, right? It's kind of a subtle little story under the surface. And if we see signs of a third party forming in the next 6 months to a year, something like that, a little more than that, then obviously we want to keep this tucked away because this is potentially where these things originate. So again, just trying to set the stage for memory and tuck it away. Does that make sense, Frankie?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have plenty more to get into with that, Vance, Thiel, all those things. We will not be stopping with that coverage. I just want to let everyone know we're going to be handing it off to Jeremy with Rise Up all day till 11 p.m. We're live, baby, on LFA TV, but we do have some technical difficulties. So you may, instead of a split screen, it may black out for a second. Don't go anywhere. Jeremy will be there in a moment. Do not touch that dial. You can end that. You can take it away.
All right, sounds good. So again, D.C., the President Trump's speech today, important, right? Putin meeting in Alaska and what's going on with the D.C. with the National Guard and what's going to go on there. I think those would be the two front and center things at his conference today. Check that out. LFA is going to be all over it throughout the day, I'm sure. Jeremy Harrell's up next with Rise Up. Have a blessed day. We'll see you tomorrow to come back. We're going to run a few of these clips, a couple clips I really want to get through tomorrow, and real estate and private equity, very important things. And we'll take a poll and we'll come back and see what everybody thinks tomorrow, and we'll talk about that out of the gate. Thanks, everyone.